Well, you're all back.
Hello.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shark Talk. On today's show, it's the Copyright Forum.
Yay!
To answer your questions, I have a great panel in the studio. Let me put it that way. I have our great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland. Didn't you also teach at the Albany Law School?
Yes, I did.
Yes, that's what I thought. We should say that. Okay. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. Let me change that. I think he is the country's leading medical illustrator and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. His work is so good that it belongs in a museum. Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio and maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Did somebody steal your poem? Poem if you went to a private college, poem if you went to a public college. This would be the place to bring your issues. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us, and that's the way I would do it if I were you, at voxpop@wamc.org. Listen, this is going to be a popular program. It always is. The phones are already ringing. Get online, and, you know, you'll have your shot, okay? Is that fair? I think so. All right, now we have to pull this phone, which is obviously made for Joe Donahue, or somebody big, tall, very close to me so that I can do this. All right, Jim in Matamoros, I'm surprised to see you here. What's up?
How do you go about submitting written material to a literary agent in hopes of publication?
Now you are really asking a question, because the agent is really very important. Who wants to go first?
And what's the question about?
How do you get an agent?
Well, if you have a book that you're trying to sell, you submit a proposal. And there are a lot of online sites that will tell you how to format a proposal, how many paragraphs, how many pages you should do. And then you just, there used to be a thing in the library called the Green Book, which you could go and find listings of all the different literary agents. It's either online or non-existent now, but,
I'm sure it's online or some version of it.
Yeah. You just start submitting it.
Yeah. And most agencies online will tell you how to submit. There'll be a drop-down menu for how to submit, and be prepared to hear the word no.
A lot.
This is very hard. And a very good question. Thank you for calling. All right, now we're going to go to Steve in Westfield. And Steve in Westfield, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, panel. I had just a quick question here. I've been working on a dream portfolio for a number of years, hundreds of stories written into it. I had a friend advise me to register it with the Writers Guild. I've done that. It's been about 2 or 3 years now. I'm sure my policy with them has lapsed. Does that mean that all my material is now open to be vultured away, or is there anything more that I can do to protect my writings and my work?
Where is it currently? Is it online? Is it posted somewhere?
It was online underneath my own profile, but I had sent a USB, like a flash drive, to the Writers Guild, and they sent me a certificate back saying that all my works were covered for a number of years, 2 years for a nominal fee, whatever it was, but I since have let that lapse. And now I'm worried during that time, like, is there a list of things that people can look at that's, like, now free, open material?
No.
And what is that something that I have to worry about?
You really need to register this with U.S. Copyright. I don't know what the Writers Guild is suggesting, why they would suggest you have any protection.
They hold scripts and stuff for ideas.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't give him any true. Yeah.
But the fact is, you haven't given up your copyrights at all by publishing.
No.
Your copyrights arise upon the work's creation.
Right.
And so it's not like if you've put the stuff online, You know, you're giving everyone permission to copy it and run around.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you are protected as a matter of law. To get the most protection you can possibly get, you should register it with the Copyright Office, and you can do that at copyright.gov.
Well,
I'm doing that immediately, if not sooner.
Okay. And Jim has written another missile to us. It says, I have a screenplay written, but I want to protect it before I shop it around. What should I do? And that's James from Kingston.
Register it with the U.S. Copyright
Office. Yeah, that's your best protection.
And how exactly do you do that? And how exactly do you do that before we go on to other things? So, and before we get three or four more calls on
copyright.gov.
You got a copyright.gov.
Got it.
And they will give you instructions. You can follow the instructions for registering online and send them money, and it's registered.
And, yeah. Paul, you said...
Excellent.
And, Paul, you said... Right,
thank you so much, guys. I'll let you go.
Goodbye. Yeah, we'll let you go, too. You said as soon as the thing is finished...
As soon as it's in fixed form, as soon as the work is completed, you are covered by federal copyright law.
So am I correct that you have to write the end before you're allowed to...
Or just put a nice period at the end.
Yeah, so, whatever that
but,
is.
Yeah, but it's important that people understand that you get copyright protection by creating something in a fixed form. But in order to get the maximum legal protection, you need to register it with the U.S. Copyright Office.
If, for example, you can't go to court and defend your copyright until you're registered with the
and don't mail it to yourself, because that doesn't work.
Right.
Does not work.
And believe me, I know all about having to register before you go to court.
And so do some of your colleagues.
And so do all those colleagues I've sent Paul's way.
Well, that's great. Okay, thank you very much. I think, is that it? Is anybody on the phone with us
Looks
now,
like or? Teresa.
No. It looks like we have to go to Jim first. All right. Oh. We're going to Jim. I forgot. I lost my place there. I didn't know where we were.
That's the third Jim today.
Yes.
Jim, go ahead.
We're up to our knees in Jims.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, everyone. I have a question about broadcast copyright. I'm affiliated with a non-commercial educational radio station, and I've been told that it is illegal to use a music service, you know, to broadcast a music service like Spotify, or even use YouTube for the audio to play, you know, selected songs. And I don't know if this is true, so I'm wondering if anyone on the panel can weigh in on if that is illegal to use those services on over the air, and why.
I used to do it all the time, and I don't see why it would be illegal, because what you're playing is getting tracked and getting reported to, you know, the companies that pay royalties for the use of the song. So whether you're getting it from a CD or from a thumb drive in your pocket, or rebroadcasting something from Spotify or YouTube, I don't see where it makes any difference. Now, it may be in Spotify's terms of service or YouTube's terms of service, due to their relationships with songwriting organizations or whatever, that you know, they say it's not allowed. But I mean, nobody's going to know.
There's always that.
Just don't rebroadcast the Spotify advertisements if you have the free account. Do that.
If I did it, Andrew Cuomo would be standing at the door with a subpoena.
Now, probably Preet Bharara.
Is it possible that it violates the usage agreement that Spotify and YouTube are only for personal use?
By the way, it sounds that right to me. Look, I'm not on the panel, and I have no rights here, but I'm going to tell you, I heard what you heard. So I'd be very careful, and I would go to the terms of service, as Paul suggests, and look it up.
I would just not say you're playing things off of Spotify or YouTube.
Well, also check to see with your station management, because they may have a mandatory license, a compulsory license, being an educational broadcaster.
Probably not.
We certainly pay the copyrights, all the copyrights that we're supposed to pay.
Yeah, you do the ASCAP and the BMI and
right.
That. You know, which is why I can't imagine, you know, it would be objectionable to replay stuff from these services. But it may be in their terms of service. But
so, yeah, go check. All right.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay. And we've gotten a couple of emails. Hello. Two questions. One, I am making collages using clippings from current and old magazines and catalogs. Have we ever heard this one before?
Uh-huh.
Do I need permission to use these images? if I want to have an exhibit or want to sell them? Does the date of the magazine or catalog matter?
Well, thank you, Roselle.
Yeah.
Very good.
Copyright and collage are always at odds. And I always advise people, if they're going to use a pre-printed image that someone else owns, to use a bit of it that's very anonymous.
What do you mean?
Well, that can't be tracked back to, you know, you're not going to lift a whole face off of something.
And there have been many lawsuits over this issue.
Yes. And also the fact that it's going to be for gallery art changes things, too.
As opposed to making posters.
Yeah. Or illustration art. It's been litigated more than a few times, and usually gallery art is given a lot more leeway than illustration.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's the sense that if you came upon this magazine fair and square, you can do whatever you want with, including cutting it up and using little pieces of it in collages. And again, I think the trouble you might get in is when, like Polly said, if you start making prints, because then you're getting into the reproduction right. Which you're not with a single gallery work.
Okay, we have to take a break, and I'm sorry to interrupt anybody here. We have lots of people. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting on the air now are excellent.
Support for WAMC comes from Schenectady Symphony Orchestra, announcing Tasting Notes, Hollywood Blockbusters. Four-course dinner, five ensembles, and six wines, Thursday, November 17th at Schenectady Community College, schenectadysymphony.org for information. Hitchcock Center for the Environment, Amherst, Massachusetts, celebrating their new living building, offering tours bi-monthly, and a hot water issues symposium on November 19th, hitchcockcenter.org. Borden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, bordenandperrin.com. And J. Rich Clothing, Northampton, Massachusetts, contemporary menswear by Theory, Bugatti, Hartford, Robert Graham, and Hudson, Main Street, Northampton, jrichclothing.com and Instagram. And the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com.
And we are back on the Copyright Forum with our wonderful panel. Okay, there was a second question from Laura. Do I need permission to use photos and maps found on the Internet of a particular city for use in my collage senior project? It is a written project. I would like to include photos and a map. And that's from Anne in Warrensburg.
It's educational.
Well, yeah, for your project, just don't have them posted on the web. I had an issue with, it was a medical illustrator where a student had taken a medical illustration. Well, actually, she had just plagiarized it. She just copied it and got like an award, and it was on the college's website.
And did she share it? Program.
Did she share it with you? No. Okay. I'd like to thank. Okay. And this is from Daniel. If I post an original song on a public site, such as YouTube, does that offer any sort of protection?
Absolutely not.
I'm glad you're definitive, Polly.
You can show by the date of posting that it's your original work as of that date, but that.
Trust me, if there's a lawsuit, it gives you zero protection.
That being said, it doesn't automatically, it doesn't put your song in the public domain either. You still have your common law copyrights, like we said before. But
you've left the front door unlocked.
Yeah, and I tell everybody, if you're going to post stuff on the Internet, register the work with the Copyright Office. Just why not? It takes 20 minutes, and it's only mildly frustrating, and it's inexpensive, so just do it.
1-800-348-2551, and we go to Cliff in Schenectady. All right, Cliff, you're on.
Hey, panel.
Hey.
Hi, Paul. This is Cliff Brucker from SCCC.
Hey, man.
You come and talk to my class very often, my music business class.
Twice.
And they stumped me the other day because we were talking about the PROs, CSAC, ASCAP, and BMI, and how they collect royalties. And when they go to restaurants who play music, they make them pay a yearly license to use that music.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, the PROs are representative of the writer and publisher, correct?
Correct.
Not the sound recording.
Not the sound recording. The sound recording is represented at this point by Sound Exchange, and that's only for digital transmissions.
Right, so, and that's just digital. So now, they asked me, what if the restaurant played recordings of songs that are in public domain? Like, for instance, you know, Italian arias from, you know, the 18th century.
Yeah, then...
Would that be okay because they are in the public domain even though it's a recording?
Absolutely, absolutely, it's okay.
The musicians,
but
don't
you know,
get a cut?
I went online and it said there are no sound recordings in the USA that are in public domain.
Well, the sound recordings might not be in the public domain, but the compositions are, and that's what counts in terms of the performing rights organization.
So the club owner could get around that by just playing recordings of songs that are in public domain.
And I've had clients, you know, restaurants and bars that make sure that the performers play only public domain or original music and take the position.
Well, here's the other thing. I mean, a restaurant that, you know, a lot of musicians play in, Paolo Lombardi's up in Wineskill. He was having music Friday and Saturday night, 10 weeks in the summer. And ASCAP and BMI basically shut him down because they came and they hit him with a $1,000 bill each.
Yeah, don't.
And he said, well, you know what? I can't afford that. I'm just not going to have live music anymore.
Yeah, don't get me started. These organizations.
Oh, man,
it
seems to be a scourge. I mean, the PROs are putting live music out of business.
They claim to be representing, you know, the artists in terms of songwriters, but what they've been doing is putting musicians out of work in huge numbers. And I've got one story after another I could tell about that.
Yeah.
Okay, listen.
So anyway, something's got to be done about that, and I got to get you back in my class soon, okay?
Okay, let me know.
Okay, bye. You have to pay the program a percentage. Thank you very much. Okay, so now we're going to go to Mike in Saratoga. All right, Mike, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon, panel. Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question regarding my father. He self-published his autobiography, one of those online publishing companies.
Uh-huh.
And basically, we're not happy with the arrangement. And it already has an ISBN number.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything we can do?
It's whatever your terms of service with the online publisher. I think generally you can pull the plug on it anytime you want. If it's
Yeah, but he can't get the rights back.
Sure he can.
At a certain, not yet.
You don't assign your rights to the online publisher.
Oh, yes, you do.
Sometimes you do, but most of the time I don't think you do.
If you get an ISBN number
does he know the situation here? Were the rights assigned?
No, I haven't really looked in detail on the contract. And I mean, at the worst case scenario, if he did, because my father did it without telling us. So if he did sign away, is there any way to get it back, or they just have it?
You have to look in the contract.
Yeah, you'd have to look in the terms of service. But I doubt he signed them away forever.
Okay. Well, all right.
Okay. Listen, panel, let's get our act together here. I want some agreement.
All right, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Paul and I are the Shartok and Armero of Armeo of the copyright form.
She's Jane Curtin.
So which is who's who? I'll tell you who's right. Okay. All right. Now let's go to let's see here. Yeah, we'll go to Henry in Niverville. Okay, Henry, how are things there in Niverville?
Hello, Alan. It's Henry in Niverville, Valencia, Kinderhook area. It's a beautiful day today. Big fan, Alan, but that's not what I'm calling about right
now.
I have a question regarding photography protection, particularly on sites like Facebook and Instagram and so forth. I've seen friends of mine from time to time on Facebook, for instance, post some legalese about protecting their posting rights, which I've been told by others really doesn't do anything.
That's just a load of horse hockey.
It's just a hoax.
Yeah, that's nonsense, all this stuff about privacy.
Okay, go slow with me because I don't understand what we're talking about here.
It comes in cycles. Right now we're going through another cycle. You'll see friends on Facebook posting this thing that sounds very legalistic, but it is a total fabrication.
What is it?
Right, correct.
It's saying they're not giving people the right to copy their stuff or to invade their privacy or to use their name and all of that. And it's this big, bold gesture where they're, you know, maintaining their independence from Facebook.
But it's absolutely meaningless.
Well, but can somebody go on to your Facebook page and grab a photo and use it?
Sure, they can share it.
If it's not registered, you have no recourse.
But they can share it on Facebook.
Yes.
I mean, that's the
because
architecture.
That's the terms of service.
The terms of service. Right. You're in Facebook's world, and you live by Facebook's rules.
Which is why when I post an image of my artwork, there's a credit line right through the middle of it. It's dulled out so that it's not the first thing you see, but it's there.
It's a watermark.
And how would someone get such a credit line for protection?
I add it in when I work on when I Photoshop it.
And what if you don't use Photoshop? Is it available in any other photo program?
Probably.
Where you have?
I just use the type tool and just. Add a layer and type my credit line, and then
I use mostly Apple's Photos or
You should be able to do it with that,
and then just dull it out so it's like 30%,
right?
And there you go,
and that's sufficient as far as some level of protection.
But register the work. Don't just put that up there.
And you register it one more time by
copyright.gov.
Copyright.gov. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that would apply for sharing photos on other sites such as Instagram and Flickr and so forth, right?
Instagram is a little trickier because very often you're taking a photo with your phone and it goes immediately to Instagram. It doesn't give you a chance to add that layer.
I see.
But
and isn't Instagram owned by Facebook?
Sure is.
Right.
Okay, so gotta let you go. Henry.
Yes.
Go ahead. One more fast one.
Was wondering, as far as sharing photos, are there certain sharing sites that you would consider safer than others? Or in any case, I should go to copyright.gov to register?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Even I know that.
Register.
Okay.
Okay.
Goodbye.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Henry. Okay. Keep listening. All right. We've gotten a whole mess of these things over the internet. I don't know why. Dear Vox Pop, about 10 years ago, I completed an art history dissertation at NYU. He shares that in common with me. That's where I did my doctorate, which has a registered copyright. I recently discovered that someone had published many of my archival discoveries and ideas in his own self-published ebook being sold on Amazon. His book contains no footnotes, and my dissertation does not appear in his bibliography. I'm wondering what steps I can take against this plagiarist, because I am in the process of publishing my own scholarly book on the topic. Thank you. And that's from Teresa. And Teresa, I'm glad you asked that question, because it's been a lot of years since 1969 with me, but somebody may want to steal something from my massive dissertation.
Here we go.
Well, Teresa, I saw that you had called earlier. I'm glad you emailed in.
And the dissertation was about?
Mental health politics in three American states.
Well, but getting back to...
It's not just a plagiarism, though. It's an infringement.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much she was taken, but...
Yeah, I mean, you can send a takedown notice to whoever's published it online saying that there's infringing matter. And in the terms of service, there's a very clear sort of multi-step process you have to take and very specific things you have to say. You will send that in and they will, under law, they have to investigate. And if they... they probably will take it down immediately. I mean, I've done this all the time.
She will have to provide the instances, though, right?
Oh, yeah. You have to show exactly what's been plagiarized and say you have a good faith belief that this is your work and it's been, it's been taken without authority. And by law, they have to investigate and take it down and give the other side a chance to respond. So,
okay.
But there are certain formats, though. The takedown notice has to be submitted.
Yeah.
Got to get a lawyer.
You can search.
You can go online. You can figure out how to do it.
Go into the terms of service. There will always be a section saying if you detect infringement on our site, and it'll give you the things you have to say in a letter.
Wow, that's terrific. Okay, if my screenplay incorporates existing fictional characters, in other words, Dracula, will I run into problems when trying to register the screenplay on copyright.gov? What complications might arise?
It won't get in the way of registration, but once you publish it, it may get into... It really depends on the character and who owns it and whether the character's in the public domain.
And how the character is handled, I would assume, in the written material.
Well, the case in point would be the Sherlock Holmes stories that the Arthur Conan Doyle's estate literary agents were coming down hard on people who used the character in their contemporary literature until the courts finally ruled, you know, Sherlock's head is run. It's time to put him out in the public domain.
Right.
Interesting.
But, you know, if you use Batman, Superman, any of those superheroes.
Or Mickey Mouse.
Or any other Disney character. You're looking at a world of hurt if you try to incorporate them.
And from Andrew, any issues with me using a photo of myself on my website taken by and published by a newspaper?
Yes.
The newspaper, the photographer or the newspaper own that photograph.
Right. Yeah. So you need to check back and get permission or whatever.
Ask, what was his name? The guy who did the Obama poster?
Shepard Fairey.
I got to work fast. Okay. Let's see here. Peter. All right, Peter, you're on. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello there. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, very well.
Excellent. So I'm curious. I think it's relatively common practice for people to, you know, Google an image or text and then put that image or text on some sort of social media platform, like, for example, putting a picture on a Facebook event. And I'm curious, if someone were to do that, could that person who does that get in any sort of trouble?
Not really. Not any. There was a time when people would get all, you know, all angry about stuff like that. But the practice, technically, it probably is some kind of infringement. But the practice is, if you're using it on social media for personal uses.
But an event would be publicizing something as opposed to just sharing it.
If you're publicizing an event, that's a commercial use. You're right. You're right. Just
unless it's like a social gathering among friends.
Oh, well, then that's not, you know, I mean, we're talking if you're having a big concert or your store is having a sale and you post on social media and use, you know, a picture you just found, you could be in trouble. Yeah, that because that's a commercial use. That's the sort of thing you normally pay money to use, even if it's on social media.
But if it's for personal use and just sort of fun with your personal connections, then am I correct in assuming there's no issue there?
There shouldn't be, no. And the worst it'll happen is somebody will say take it down, but that doesn't really happen hardly at all anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, now we're going to go to Ian on line number 5. Ian, you're on.
Hey there. I am a artist, and I sculpt and make masks. And I was recently commissioned by a musician to make a mask for him that would sort of become his persona, kind of like Daft Punk or Deadmau5. You know, their masks are their identities. So I'm sort of wondering what rights can I retain where, you know, if he's using it on T-shirts or posters or film or like all the, you know, if it's going across media to make him money, how am I able to continue to get compensation for that since I was the creator of this mask?
You need to hammer it out in a contract.
Put it in writing.
Yeah, it needs to be in writing. Look, my position whenever I'm faced with this is, if you're going to make money from my creation, either you need to pay me enough money to compensate me for giving you all the rights, which I've never run into, or we need to work out a sharing arrangement. If something that I create that's so wonderful that's going to make you money, then we need to work out a sharing arrangement of some sort of percentage.
If you go to your local library, you can probably find a copy of the Graphic Artists Guild Handbook of Pricing and Ethical Guidelines, and they have sample contracts in there that you can, you're free to copy and paste.
And what's the site again, Polly?
Well, it's your local library. I don't know if the guild.
Yeah,
has
I do have a copy of one of those.
Yep.
There you
I was just wondering if, you know, because that's all graphic design work. I was wondering if the same applies to
applies.
A 3D work.
Yes,
it applies.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call.
Thank you very much.
Right. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMT comes from ClipCentric Albany, a local video services division of ClipCentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrated veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998. WindyHollowVet.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive kiosks, commercial casework for special events, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. And the Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for over 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org.
And we are back, and the telephone number here is 1-800-348-2551. All right, we'll go to Pauline in Rexford, where everybody's a king. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, don't I wish. Anyway, I just have a quick question. If one writes poetry and short stories and is going to be sending them out for popular or a possible publication, should you first go to that, what you were telling us to go to?
Copyright.gov.
Copyright. Should we go to copyright.gov first? Or is that, you should? Because I always thought that if you sent something somewhere, if they accepted it, then they owned it.
No.
You
own it. Unless you sign
you
away
still
your
own
rights.
It.
In order to give up your copyright, you have to sign away your rights. It has to be signed away.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And
it's all right.
If you're sending the stuff to reputable publishers too, I put a copyright notice on it, but I don't, registering it because you're not publishing yet. Reputable publishers don't become reputable by stealing
ripping
people's
off
submissions,
yeah.
You know. So
now we're going to get 20 calls from saying, "Oh yes, they do."
But,
they stole
but it's still, Paul. It's not that difficult to register.
It's not that difficult to do.
And I would.
Okay.
I am hyper vigilant these days.
And you can
Paul knows why.
You can take all of the poems that you've written and put them into one lump and register them all for one fee.
As a collection.
As a collection. You don't need to register each
to
one
know.
Separately. Just make sure that when you do that, you keep a copy of each of the poems in that collection so that you can refer to it to, if you need to see, was that in that collection or was this, whatever.
It'll be a group, group registration.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Well, before you go, I have a question for you. Where did you go to college?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I went to Siena as an undergraduate and the College of St. Rose for my master's.
Okay, well, you've defied the stereotype.
Oh, what is that? I'm curious.
If you went to a public college, it would be a poem. And if you went to a private college, it would be a poem. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, boy. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Speaking of public, we're going to go to Sarah in Queensbury, where everyone plays by the rules. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Perfectly.
Yes. Well, I create, I've been contracted to create a educational program for a hospital that's helping patients recover after a transplant. So the big issue that they've asked me to help with is what is safe to eat and what is not safe to eat. Now, I've negotiated with the hospital that my company, will own the copyright to the finished product. But in the product, we have to teach patients what foods are safe to eat. Like, you can eat green giant frozen green beans, but you can't eat fresh green beans because they may have germs in them that your body's not ready to deal with. This is a very visual program, and I want to put pictures of products the patient might actually see when they go to the grocery store. So a picture of a green giant bag of green beans or a Stouffer's lasagna to explain what's safe and not safe. Ultimately, it's being used for educational purposes, but not by me. It's by my client. Do I have to have permission from 100 different food makers to include pictures of their product in this educational program?
There may be 100 different brands, but it's probably still only one company.
Right. Yeah, the answer is going to be generally no, because what you're doing is fair use. You know, you're putting these things up there not to sell food or not to package food. You're putting it up there to describe what food can be eaten.
To educate people.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I assume you're, by putting up Green Giant, you're saying, okay, you can eat Green Giant products or Green Giant green beans. They're going to actually like that. That's going to be...
Yeah,
I'd be careful putting up a big brand and say, don't eat this, it will kill you.
That's right. That would be unless.
That would not
unless
go
you
well.
Were going the other way.
If, right. if you do have a situation where you need to warn people off a certain class of foods that mm-hmm. are prepackaged, try to make a fake label for it that is somewhat similar but not exactly the label. So you could say
they can't eat anything with grapefruit juice, and as it turns out, Fresca has grapefruit juice in it, but it's a particular brand.
I think
it's not because it's bad; it's just because it has grapefruit juice.
Yeah,
in it.
Again, I think it's fair use as long as you're not saying anything that is malicious or untrue.
Is it fair use even if I'm being compensated for this?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Okay. So we got lots of lines now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Peter in Amherst, which, of course, is right there. And it's both a public and a private college. Yeah. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show today. I have a question. Back in the mid-90s, I do nature recordings that have been heard nationally on NPR as well as CBS Sunday Morning. And recently I was watching TV and came across a commercial for a Sleep Number bed. And there were rainforest sounds in the background that I recognized immediately as a recording that I had made. These CDs were commercially available, and I'm just curious what, if any, recourse I might have.
Do you have any copyright registrations protecting these recordings?
Yeah, absolutely.
And these were on your own label, or were they subject to a recording contract?
No, they were on my own label.
I think you should contact an IP lawyer named Paul Rapp.
Or just another IP lawyer of any name, but I think that's clear infringement.
You have a really good case.
And you have a really good case.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Proving it, they'll make you prove it, but I think that's going to be easy enough to do.
Just overlap the sounds.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I think in my own experience with Paul and other copyright attorneys, if they're confronted with this, you're going to get a settlement and hopefully an appropriate retroactive license fee for the use of your commercial license fee for the use of your work.
And you wouldn't be the first one either.
No.
Our
no.
wonderful Selma Kaplan, who works here at WAMC sometimes, she collected with her group She was watching the television too and saw
Indigo Girls.
No, she didn't. She wasn't Indigo. She was the Rude Girls.
Rude Girls.
Yeah, right, right.
So absolutely, you've got grounds to pursue this, but I would contact a copyright attorney and
go get them.
Go get them.
Yeah, send the classic angry lawyer letter.
Send us 10%.
Let me. A quick question: is there a, for instance? I believe, and I could be wrong, in the music world, you're able to use, four or eight bars of a piece of music without compensating. Is there any rule to that?
No, there's no such rule.
That's not fair use.
There's a de minimis rule that, if you use, but it really depends on a whole bunch of factors.
If it was enough for you to recognize it. Yeah, it was too much.
It was your sound recording, and it was used in a commercial. And so I think you're off to the races on this one.
Yeah.
Okay, as I say,
thanks.
Send us
10%. I'll give you guys a cut.
Send us 10%. Okay, all right. And he said exactly the right thing. Okay, let's see here. Yeah. We'll go to Charles in Chatham. Okay, Charles, you're on.
Charles. Can you hear me?
Whoa, yeah.
Oh, okay, we're on the road. This is some Bluetooth thing. A friend of mine writes a humor column, and every once in a while I'm asked to provide a title because I seem to be able to read the column and come up with something that's appropriate and funny. If this turns into, say, a common saying, is there some way I should take precautions so I can be compensated too?
No.
No, you really can't copyright words or phrases, short phrases.
Yeah. He could trademark it, but it would need to be attached to a specific product.
Right.
Yeah, a good or a service. But
okay.
Short phrases are just not, protectable by any.
But he could have a contract with his friend, right? He could say, hey, Louis, if you're going to use all my stuff,
right?
Absolutely, he's being paid for a service.
But he's like, if you've got a title for one of these columns, and the next day somebody comes out with a T-shirt with that, three or four words on it, there's really not a whole lot you can
tough
do.
Tough darts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye. All right, and that leaves us with one person on the phone. So if you want to get in, you can now. And that is Audrey in Cooperstown. Okay. Audrey, welcome. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, my question is, how do I go about publishing and copyrighting collections of my poems?
Well, we've dealt with that already, but we'll do it again, won't we, Polly?
Absolutely.
Yes, you go to copyright.gov.
I'm sorry?
Copyright.gov.
Copyright G-O-V, okay.
No, copyright dot.
You got to get G-O-V. That dot in there.
Dot G-O-V.
Okay.
And just follow the instructions.
And you.
Okay.
Now, again, we said this before, your work is copyrighted when you create it, but you're going to register it in order to gain the maximum amount of legal protection.
And just go to their...
have to register?
That's where you're going to copyright.gov. The work
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you very well.
The work is copyrighted as soon as you create it.
Okay.
Okay? But in order to gain the maximum legal protection, you need to go to this website, www.copyright.gov, and register that copyright.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much for your help.
And you're
thank
welcome.
You. Bye. All right, now we're going to go to, we're going to go to whoever this is on line three. But it's very unclear because, no, don't go to line three. Go to line one. All right, we'll go to line one. We're going to go to line one. Go, line one.
Okay, hello. I've been listening a long time, and I'm really interested in this topic. I'm writing a script based on a nonfiction event, and I'm using someone else's book. I was wondering what the legal precautions are for that.
Do you have the rights to use the book?
No, but it's a
It's a nonfiction event, and there have been a number of books written about the event.
Right. I would use all of the books. As long as you're using very factual information, those facts are not – and nonfiction writers really don't like this when somebody – but there's not a whole lot they can do because they're reporting facts. What you might get into trouble is a lot of times guys writing nonfiction – people writing nonfiction books enhance their books with – conversations that they think happened or might have happened,
or
they
characters, ancillary characters.
They and that stuff is protectable because it's even though it's under a nonfiction cloak, it really is kind of fiction. And so
because they're speculating.
Yeah, they're speculating. And
now, is his book a fiction book or is his book a nonfiction?
His book is a
nonfiction book,
supposedly. But yep. Even a nonfiction book, sometimes they fill it in with conversations.
But that does lead to this other question, which I find intimately important. Let's just say you have a favorite political character who you talk about a lot, and there have been a lot of books written about that political character. But now you write a novel, about that. Which is pretty close to the life of that person. So then what happens?
Then I think as long as it's clear that it's fiction, that you're going to be okay.
And you can write a fly page.
The more famous the person is, the more you can stick them in a fictional setting and not worry that you're making stuff up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, by being a public person.
Yeah.
They have lost a lot of the rights to feel affronted.
Right. As a public person, I know this.
Yes.
But, David, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Great.
Thanks, David. All right.
Have a great day.
Yeah.
You too.
Okay, let's get... Okay, now we're going to get Martha in. All right, Martha, your turn. You got to make it snappy because we're running out of time. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I've been doing some family history research, and I was told as sort of a family myth that one of my ancestors invented something that's quite common. And in my research, I actually found the patent for this thing.
Cool.
And supposedly he was swindled out of it by the
Major Parker. Yeah, that's always the way it goes.
So this happened, of course, I think we're going back 80 years or more. Is there any reparations or... anything that might be done about something that happened that long ago?
Probably not. Probably the statute of limitations has run a long, long time ago, and there's really not a whole lot you can do. You hear about cases, but it's when people that go on for years and years. But it's when people start complaining within the statute of limitations, which. For infringement of a patent, I believe, is 3 years. I'm not 100% positive, but
I think that's true.
If you know about it and you don't complain within a certain amount of time, you lose your rights.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I'll frame it then.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we got to take another one, but it's going to be real short, and that's from Richard. All right, Richard, you got to make it real short because we got to be out of here in about a minute.
All right, quick question. If you're painting, you're an artist, and you're painting, you use someone else's photograph. What's the story?
The story is that if you merely translate the image from a photograph into a painted image, you are creating a derivative work, and you do not have the right to do that.
It has to be transformative, and that's a large gray area, but... You saw.
So that's really the question. How much do you have to vary something?
Well, Google Shepard Fairey and look at what happened to him with regard to the Obama portrait, and that'll give you an idea.
That was never resolved.
There's no
answer to that question.
A lot of money in lawyers.
You can be inspired by the photograph. You can take certain facts from the photograph, color of eyes, color of hair, whatever. But you can't copy the photograph.
So thank you very much. Appreciate it. Can't go any further. All right. We're just about out of time. Thanks to everybody who's on the line, which is Valerie and Mary Alice and Ryan and Crystal. I'm sorry that today wasn't your day. And thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years. CNA nharchitects.com, and the New York State Bar Association. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, celebrating 35 years serving the public. 800-342-3661. And Curtis Lumber, providing home improvement product and advice to homeowners and contractors, supporting local communities for over a century. CurtisLumber.com. And Hudson Wine Merchants. Hudson Wine Merchants in Hudson, New York, offering selections for holiday meals, gifts, and everyday wines. Curbside service and delivery available. Raise your glass. HudsonWines.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Box Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Susie Checkout. She's terrific for answering the phones today. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.